Matt, you joining tonight, buddy? Awesome. Robert, how you doing, man?
Very good. Good morning or good evening.
What time is it there?
8 a.m. We just finished daylight savings.
Oh, lovely.
8 a.m. Thursday.
You in Australia?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I got a couple clients out there, man. Everybody says it's so beautiful.
It is. It's a lot. Pretty good place. Just heading into autumn, wintery, but nothing compared to a North American winter.
What's the winter out there like?
I'm in Canberra, which is the capital, which is inland a bit, so it gets pretty cold. I could get down to minus 5, 6, 7 Celsius, but icy, not really any snow, but beautiful clear days. So I can winter cold is just beautiful clear days, still sunny, but just that, cold in the morning.
Yeah, that's awesome. So still able to function, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, like I'm in New Brunswick, and man, like we have been having this like bipolar season right now where it doesn't understand whether or not it's winter or if it's summer. And one day it's beautiful and you could literally walk out in shorts, and the next day we wake up, nowhere to lie, I put my dogs out, and it's like 2 feet of snow. I'm like, what? Like, why did that happen? Who made this executive decision without me? The worst too, because I just got a puppy, and so I was telling everybody like I love her, I love the puppy, she's a sweetheart, but like, man, doing it with this weather, it's just such a pain in the butt. You don't even think about it until you
Having
have.
new puppies are a lot like having a kid. You're getting out for toilet breaks again and waking up in the night. And
Yeah, it's all that stuff, right? And then it made even worse when you have crappy weather and you can't get them outside to run and have some fun. So
spot on.
that's awesome. I don't think I've met you actually before, Robert. Who's your coach?
Andrew.
Andrew, okay.
We've been
Awesome.
just about 6 months now.
Good.
Just
And how are things going?
really good. Really good. Yeah, Andrew's my tall father of many child partner in crime.
That's awesome. Yeah, he's a good one. I love him too. John, Paul, how you guys doing?
I'm good. I just walked in the door.
No worries. No worries. Guys, I'm seeing a lot of blanks. Sorry?
You're doing this tonight instead of Greg?
Yeah, Greg, his son had a mishap. So they texted me and asked if I could fill in because I'm pretty sure Greg, I'm not sure if he's at the hospital or not. His son's okay, as far as I know. But he needed to be with family.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll send him a note. Hope his son's okay.
Yeah. So like guys, before I'm gonna go into some of that stuff, but we're gonna start with some wins and stuff like that. I'd like to get to know you a little more, just to kind of get this thing more interactive. Because the topic that Greg originally wanted to talk about was protein and just really getting into it. And if I know Greg, and if he says he wants to get into protein, he has an hour to talk to you about protein. And so that's more than I can talk about protein. Like I can talk about protein for about 35 seconds, and I think that you'll probably get enough information from at least my brain. But I'll do it my best in terms of how I'll spin it in regards to where my brain thinks in regards to hypertrophy. So what we're all here for is growth, right? We're looking for growth. We're looking for athleticism. We're looking for increasing our fitness metrics. So, but before we get into that, just as people are still coming in, guys, if you haven't taken off your cameras, I'd love to see you just so I can get to know you. Lewis, Brian, Chaz, I'm not sure if you're there, man. Austin. And then Matt's obviously just eating. He's chowing down some food. He's probably getting some protein, which is exactly what we need to see right now. What kind of protein you got? But yeah, guys, so what are, there you go. See, we did it. Say, so anybody, any wins this month? Any wins in this last, awesome, man. Good. I just stocked up too. My bank account is not happy, but I'm not sure what it's like over there across, not in Canada, but man, like a 2 pound tub here went up to like $120. Nowhere to lie. It went up so much. Everything is just disgustingly priced. So, any wins this past week or this past month that you guys want to share? Anything popping up? Nobody raised their hand. I'm gonna self-appoint somebody to talk. John, you want to go?
So, I'm feeling really good about how I'm progressing. Since I'm 16 weeks post rotator cuff surgery,
Okay.
so I'd say at this point my unilateral exercises on my surgical side are about 60% of my non-surgical side, and I go down to one day a week of PT next week,
Awesome.
so I'd call
Awesome.
that a win.
That's a huge win, man. What was the projection when they got you out of the surgery?
Well, the doctor had said that I would need 4 to 5 months of PT after the surgery to get to full volume. You know, 4 months is tomorrow. It was more complicated than we expected because they had to reattach the bicep tendon too, because the there was so much retraction on the supraspinatus that the bone had mangled the bicep tendon. So I'm dealing with rehabbing both.
But you're progressing.
I keep getting stronger. What can I say?
Yeah. Oh, dude, I had a client a long time ago, actually. I moved again to New Brunswick, but when I was in Ontario, I had a client, same thing. She had a retracted supraspinatus, and we just did a lot of stuff to help stabilize in every way we possibly could. And she progressed amazingly. And she at the time she was like shy of 60, and she was doing things that a normal 60-year-old shouldn't be able to do, and that was with the injury. So you can do a lot.
And I'll be 70 in 2 months from today. So the and Greg has me on BP 157 and T500.
Awesome,
So I think
awesome.
that's helped a lot.
Yeah, and I personally have no experience with it, but I've been hearing a lot of good things. A lot of my clients, or people I know, or people in the program have reached out, or even just shared in these calls that there's been a lot of good things coming from it. So that's awesome, man. What's the goal going forward then?
At this point, I'm switching from CrossFit. I've switched from CrossFit training to bodybuilding training because I want muscle and stability before I even think about impact.
Yeah. So what got you into CrossFit?
Because that was a gym I joined in 2019, and then I made quarterfinals last year.
Yeah.
I was 243rd in my age group worldwide. And it was like my core got to a point where I'd never been there before, and I was able to do things I'd never been able to do in my life. So,
Yeah, no, it's awesome. These are all good reasons, man. Any reason for exercise is a good reason to me. Robert, we were just chatting. What about yourself, man? What's your goal right now? Anything, any milestones you hit lately?
So, been through a body composition phase for the last 6 months or 5 months, probably with Andrew, down about 7-8% body fat.
Good for you.
Pretty happy with that. And so, probably a highlight for me over the last week was my oldest boy, who's 10, who helps me take the photos for the check-in. He's a little whippet, like typical 10-year-old that runs all day, so he's got like 0% body fat. And he goes like, "Whoa, Dad, you're starting to get a six pack."
That's
That
awesome.
was pretty cool. And also the mobility side, I do my stretching and my elbows under a pliability, which is one of those apps, guided sort of breath work and stretch work every night. And the kids have started to get really into it, so they sort of wind down with me, and we all, all out on the mat doing our stretching that night, which is just really cool because the kids just want to get into it, like, what are you stretching and what's this doing? But they have the flexibility of kids, so they just like effortlessly fold down into the splits, and then they look at me and go, "What? Why are you doing this?" I was like, "I can't do the full splits."
Yeah, that's awesome. Good for you, man. You know what? Monkey see, monkey do, though. I used to do a lot of Olympic lifting. I haven't done it in a little while. I've got predominantly into bodybuilding training as well in the last like year and a bit. And it's funny because now I didn't actually even think about this until you just said that. But I have three kids too, and they don't copy me very much in the weight room when I'm doing bodybuilding training. But when I used to do like Olympic lifting stuff and mobility, they're monkeys, man. Like they would come in and I'd be stretching and they'd be doing like trying to get into a snatch. I'd be doing certain mobility poses and they'd be trying to follow along. Now they don't really care. They just come in and be like, "Can I lift that?" No, and then just walk away the board. It's like a one max attempt. Not too bad. But I will tell you, it's pretty funny seeing like a kid that weighs no more than 20 pounds trying to pick up a 400-pound barbell. They don't care. It's like, I'm just gonna try
I'm
this.
graced with all the kids being super, super athletic and really, really fit and have a lot of fun. But when I go, I'll run with them around the oval or something, and they just don't understand. They're like, "What? Do you deliberately go this slow?" No, man. I weigh 110 kilos. And then, so the oldest, he will run with me and then just start cartwheeling as we go because running isn't enough. So he'll just do some cartwheels on the run. And
I know, only a dad understands like the beauty of that. It's not enough to just simply run. Do it upside down on your hands. It's so true. That's awesome. Anybody else have any wins or anything like that going on? Lewis, Jeff, I'm not sure. PJR is hot spots. Not sure what your name is there, boss. You're on mute there, buddy. Still don't got you. Hold on a second. I'm just gonna prick that button there. There.
Also, I work with Coach Chris. I've been in the program a little over 3 months,
Awesome.
down about 50 pounds. I've got two replaced hips, so I've had them for 15 plus years. So just I got about 10 more pounds to get down, and then just starting to work on strength and flexibility. So
Good, man. Is it 50 pounds?
at 50 pounds since end of December, yeah.
No way. Good for you, man. What led to the change?
Meeting with my doctor, basically, you know what I mean? Blood pressure was 165 plus all the time. They wanted me to put on meds for blood pressure and stuff like that, and I said no. He says, "Well, your blood pressure will come down when you lose the weight." And then I said, "So okay, I'll lose the weight first, and then we'll see if we need any meds." And now the blood pressure is down between 120 and 130. No meds. Weight's down. Now I'm just trying to build good positive habits to nutrition with Greg, workouts with Coach Chris. So now it's just trying to develop new lifestyle. So
That's amazing, man. If you can, if I'm actually kind of picking on you a little bit here, what was the biggest thing that helped you get that result? It's pretty fantastic.
well, worked with Coach Chris, so I did get on Zepbound for one, and that does assist my blood sugar levels because I was pre-diabetic. And then just really sticking to the diet plan that we got. And it's basically around 2,000 calories a day. So constantly staying in a deficit, weights, workouts 3 to 4 times a week, heavy cardio, not heavy cardio with the hips. I don't run, no impact stuff. So the jump rope, I would ruck. So I got a 30 and 50 pound rucksack. So put on the one of them sauna suits, the heavy suits, and put on a weight and go for a walk for about an hour and just really stay away from the sugary treats. Sugary and salty is was the cravings, and meal prep, meal plan, just say no, you
And
know.
what was the biggest thing about the meal plan that was different than your, lifestyle pre-MI?
So pre-MI, it was food. I just used to grab it. I've worked construction for almost 35 years. Meals on brown bag meals. Nutrition was secondary. Just you need calories in to work 60, 70 hours a week. So it was whatever was convenient, whatever was fast. You always thought that I'll burn it off. It doesn't matter. And then every year you're 5, 10 pounds heavier, and it just kind of keeps going up, and the weights never go down anymore. So.
Yeah, well, dude, again, good job, man. That's amazing. Good for
Thanks.
you. Well, guys, if there's somebody else who wants to share anything, I would love if you do want to pop in, just let me know. Again, I'm gonna kind of go at this just with using what Greg was gonna talk about, because I'm definitely gonna let him take the reins when he does get the call. He'll probably be on next week, and that way he can kind of like fill you in on the science behind it. But when we're talking about protein, because that's really what he wanted to talk about and everything, what I want to talk about is more like what's the point of it, right? Because I think that people get hyperfixated on certain macronutrients, protein obviously being one of them, and sometimes it's otherwise, but they get hyperfixated on one and they forget what the intention thereafter is, right? So as an example, like you guys can type in the chat or you can just unmute. What do you think people are taking protein for? What's the number one reason why most people eat tons of protein? You guys got an answer to that? Type it in or unmute and just say it.
Build muscle.
Muscle, must build muscle. There you go. Good. What else? Anything else? Or is that pretty much the reason? We all can nod in agreement that that's pretty much why everybody eats a lot of protein. Yeah. So like, if that's it, then what we're thinking about is we're actually thinking about the solution rather than the actual stimulus. And that's what people forget. Like you can't just like take in protein and build muscle without an actual hypertrophy stimulus. And that's what we forget. Like the cool thing, and I won't bore you guys with the science behind hypertrophy. We'll leave that for another call some other time. But a little bit of it would be that like when we actually do our work in the gym, what actually ends up happening is yeah, you're right, man. Austin, it's definitely more situating. What happens in the gym, because we actually do our work with like a slow concentric rep, like an unintentionally slow concentric rep, where we take sets to, you know, within 1 to 2 reps of failure, is you end up getting what we call like a hypertrophy stimulus. And that's because you got your myosin and actin cross bridges, and you get like a slowing of contraction. So meaning like this cross bridging that forms as a reaction of a contraction, it slows. And then that actually triggers a hypertrophy stimulus in the brain. And the amount that you can do that triggers a greater stimulus. And then that stimulus is therefore going to create what we call MYOPS. So MYOPS is myofibrillar protein synthesis. I definitely encourage you guys to look it up and just make sure it's something that is part of your vocabulary, and also understand why it's there, because there's a couple different parts of that people need to understand. So MYOPS isn't just necessarily growth, because sometimes people have thought of it like that, and then it leads them down a rabbit hole of chasing it. No different than just chasing more protein. And we'll go into that a little bit more. But MYOPS can be triggered from muscle damage as well as muscle growth. So we already can tell we have a problem, because we got a fork in the road, and protein is going to both. Okay, so with me? So we got MYOPS being triggered. We don't know if it's muscle damage or muscle growth. How do we know? So what is, I think it might be easier if we look at muscle damage first and we say that's what's going to cause that. Do you guys want to take a guess at what muscle damage is?
Obviously, like fibers to the tearing and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was the predominant thought up until like pretty much like 2000, maybe like early 2000s, and even then now. I would actually wager that like the majority of people still are in the belief that that's what's going on, because the information is so, I don't want to say widely misunderstood, but just not available. And so people are just aren't understanding that there's more to it, right? And so what we're actually finding is that when you take sets to a really close degree of failure, so when I'm saying failure, first of all, guys, just, you know, I'm not meaning mental failure, because every single contraction, this is kind of ironic, is every single contraction failure is actually voluntary failure. We have to understand that if we're gonna have this conversation, and if you want to really, really dive into this, because contraction failure is mental failure, meaning your brain is responsible for an actual contraction. We know that, right? Which means that like your muscles will always actually truthfully have more to give. Okay? It's the brain that reaches its peak amount of discomfort, and then it says, I can't do this anymore. And now that's not your conscious brain per se. You can definitely control it there, but it's what's going on inside central motor cortex. And what's essentially going to govern that is fatigue. Okay. So fatigue, I don't want you to think tired. And one thing that's helped me understand this kind of lingo is dissociating like typical kind of terms and how we talk about it when we're talking to our friends from different lingo and linguistics when we're talking about hypertrophy research. So like fatigue in the regular world would be like, I'm tired, I'm gonna take a nap, right? So fatigue in the gym is more of an actual neurological process, okay? There's a bunch of things that can actually come in here and cause fatigue. Things like muscle damage cause fatigue, things like compound motions cause fatigue, lengthened positions, sets to failure. These things all cause fatigue. You know what doesn't cause muscular fatigue? Being tired, ironically. That's the funniest part about this conversation, because it's like people don't understand that, and they're like, oh my God, I'm tired. It's like, no, you're not. Like, and I'm again, Robert, your dad, I'm the same. Like, we can probably both attest. You probably had days where you didn't sleep, and somehow miraculously you go in there and you still break a record, right? Like, it's weird. You're like almost blown away. Like, how'd that happen? I shouldn't have been able to do this. Well, it's because your muscles actually did not have any type of fatigue on them. Your brain didn't either. So, I mean, there's no intramuscular damage, and your brain was actually still, it was good. You might have had some like wear and tear here. It's like, oh, long day. And is that gonna maybe affect motivation? Sure, but like you were able to overcome it with a coffee, and so it's like go. And that's kind of what happens, is we get into this territory. And so MYOPS, when we look into that, MYOPS can be again triggered. I wanted to kind of go through that first. The first MYOPS can be triggered because of muscle damage or obviously muscle hypertrophy signaling. And so we need to understand, is it going to one or the other if you're trying to take protein in for the sake of growing? Okay, so now we've come full circle. We understand like the protein, yeah, we're taking it in to grow muscle for sure. But if we're taking it in and then we're getting MIOPS, but all we're doing all day long is recovering from muscle damage, you're never gonna grow. Okay, so a couple of things just so you guys can know that cause muscle damage. And I'm gonna try to talk more in anecdotal situations so you can think about it and how you've been there. I want you guys to think about this and how you've been there, okay? Let's use leg day as an example. You ever been on a leg day and really like maybe the first exercise or at least the first really hard balls to the wall exercise, you go at it and it was great and you take the sets to failure and you're proud. You maybe even break a record, whether or not it's a weight or it's a rep record, but you break the record and it's amazing. But then what happens is every other set past that starts sucking. You ever had that? Like you can't keep up with yourself anymore. Got some nods in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's happened before. Yeah, it's happened to us all. And the reason why is because the fatigue that you generated from that set was so, well, it was fatiguing to the neurological system. So again, central motor cortex. It's the central motor cortex, by the way, you guys, it's responsible for neurological contractions and motor unit recruitment, therefore muscle contractions, right? So when we're trying to get that thing in the optimal place for upregulating the signal that could be growth, then we're trying to get away from fatigue and things like going to failure. Bring fatigue up. Going to failure also can cause more muscle damage. Okay. But it's not because of the fatigue per se. It's because of something called calcium ion accumulation. So, Robert, you're saying what causes muscle damage? Is it tearing? People used to think so. But when they actually started looking into it, is they actually found that calcium ions, when the muscle was like really worked, especially in lengthened positions, they found calcium ions would flood into the cytoplasm of the cell and eat it away. Now, this isn't literal, but the picture I'm using is like eats it away like acid, okay? And that's actually muscle damage. And it doesn't actually get repaired. What happens with the MIOPS signaling is the protein that you're sending in, the protein building materials you're giving your body, what ends up happening is they actually go in and they take out that actual myofibril and they bring in a new one, okay? It's a lot of work. It's not an easy job. It's like replacing an I-beam in your house. Okay. Now, what people end up doing is they end up, yeah, doing a lot of damage to their muscles and they end up like doing this on repeat and they keep on replacing I-beams or again, running over like a pothole and then replacing their tire. And then they keep on replacing the tire and they wonder why they're not growing. And it's like, that's not growth. But if you were to actually test their body, MIOPS signaling would be very, very high. So therefore, need of protein would be very, very high. So if you haven't caught on, the thing I'm trying to ease you guys into as I'm talking about this is we don't want to use MIOPS for the sake of muscle damage. If anything, the more, especially for natural athletes, we want to push people towards the part of trying to use MIOPS in only muscle signaling, like muscle growth signaling. Okay. So how do we do that? A couple simple rules, right? We definitely want to train hard. There's no doubt about it. But training to absolute failure, and there's an asterisk there, training to absolute failure might not be needed. Okay. When is it needed? In lighter weights, okay? Ironically, you need to go closer to failure in lighter weights. Because if you actually watch your contraction velocity, it stays fast throughout the entirety of the set when you're using lighter weights versus when you're using heavier weights. If you guys were all, like, just picture, I don't know, it doesn't really matter what the exercise is. All of you guys right now, picture an exercise that you're really supremely confident in, something that you like. So Chaz, it's going to be your Smith machine squat, man. You're great there. Picture that right now. Robert, like, I'm not sure what it is for you. Maybe it's like a chest supported row or something like that. Paul, maybe it's like a shoulder press. I don't know. Picture something in your mind where you're really, really good at, right? And I want you to think about what it feels like to do 20. Okay. Think about what the first 10 reps feel like. What does it feel like? Right? Robert, right? Chaz, you're just squatting. Now, what does it feel like to load up with the maximal weight for five? It ain't going anywhere fast from rep one, right? Yeah, exactly. It's slow the whole time. It's like, and it's basically like that set starts at hemorrhoids, right? And that's where we go. So it's like when we're working heavy, no, I'm not saying that obviously, but when we're starting there, what happens is we don't even have a chance to accelerate the weight because it's maximally loaded. So that's the reason why when you're using lighter weights, you have to go closer to failure because it's going to take you that much time to get to the point where you actually get a slower contraction speed. Okay. What else would happen in a set that's like 15 reps, guys? Throw them out there. What do you think? What other kind of feedback is your body going to give you when you're in a set to 15?
Normally, for me, heart rate's going up, starting to breathe heavy.
Yep. So cardiovascular. What else?
Yeah.
There's no wrong answers, guys. You've been there. You guys have been in the trenches. What do you feel? What do your hands feel like when you're doing a set of walking lunges with dumbbells?
Rib strength, lactic acid buildup.
Yep. What else? Keep going.
Yeah,
How's your back?
all the small muscles start to come to the top. So.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, so it's distracting. You never notice that? It's almost distracting. You ever had a barbell on your back doing a set of squats to 20? Are you even really thinking about your legs at that point? Or are you feeling about how uncomfortable you are at the bar on your back?
Yeah.
Right? That's what I mean. So, like all these other things. So, my question to anybody who's actually leaning on higher reps, and again, I'm not saying there's not a time and place for it. I'm saying if you're leaning on that, are you aware that those things are now becoming distractions and essentially elements that could be pulling you away from your goal? Right? Whereas if you are doing something supremely stable, usually, right? Something, or not necessarily stable, but highly skillful, which is pretty much the same thing. Because if you're really good at something, chances are you're pretty stable at it. Then you're not thinking about those things at all. Again, I'm going to use the like if I was saying, Robert, you're doing rows, you're in a chest forward row. If you're doing five, you're thinking about pulling that thing. That's all you're thinking about, pulling that thing, right? Getting good contractions, great setup, stabilize, initiate, right? And you're thinking contract through, and like by the time you're done five, you're not thinking about your grip strength failing because you're probably going to be strapped up. There's no way your heart's going to be bursting through your chest. It's five reps, you're fine. So there's a time and place for both, but that's the reason why we don't have to work on those high reps. Because guess what happens with high reps? Fatigue. Right? A lot of fatigue. So people used to think again that it was actually harder on the body to do low amount of reps, but it's like it's not. There can be an argument made for again training age and things like tendon ligament adaptations, but the irony is that it actually takes heavier loading to actually adapt the tendons and ligaments anyways. Like the actual I always forget the name of it, but the actual honeycombing within a bone hardens and gets more dense as we load the skeletal tissue, right? That's what we know. We know this kind of stuff happens, tissues like that. That's why strong people do hard things. We end up loading the skeletal system and like it actually adapts. So we know that kind of stuff. And these tendons and ligaments adapt as such as well, as long as we're not overtraining. So when it comes down to protein, if we can steer away from doing tons of reps, if we can steer away from going to absolute failure to doing set of five max loaded, if you're away from one rep, do you guys get that visual? If you stay one rep away from failure, all the reps were still stimulating anyways because they were hard, they were really hard. Whereas if you were doing 20 or 15 reps, you don't even know if you're actually even failing or if it's just so uncomfortable you put it down. Okay? But there's also a lot of things that are kind of enticing. They're like the siren's call of a high rep set. And what are those? Sweet pump. That's the biggest one for guys. You get a sweet pump, right? You walk out and you look like a balloon animal. You're like, yeah, I look amazing. Another thing a lot of guys like to tell us, we see this on the intake form constantly, is that guys are like, I love feeling like I got my butt handed to me at the gym. I want to be a sweaty mess on the ground when I'm done because I want to know I gave my all. That's amazing. It's great. I love that work ethic, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's best for hypertrophy. Okay. So another thing, and I'm going to let you guys kind of intervene, kind of talking about this stuff a little bit, is we want to make sure that lengthened positions aren't always being prioritized. When we're doing lengthened positions are two things. Okay. They are actually a couple of things, but they're predominantly two things. Like in terms of an actual loading position, we're maximally loading a lengthened joint position. So an example would be like a preacher curl, a dumbbell preacher curl. When you're down in that 45 degree angle, the lot of weights on the bicep at the very, very bottom. So that'd be like a lengthened position. Okay. It's also a lengthened position anatomically to lie back on like an incline curl and stretch your biceps there because you're actually lengthening anatomically. We can't even do that. You guys lean back and just go like that and you retract your scapula to reach. You'll feel a stretch through here. You feel that. You can kind of feel that kind of stuff. Or again, lengthened position for your chest, feel like this. Open like that and put your arms behind you. You can feel your chest stretch, kind of thing. Door frame stretch. That'd be a lengthened position. If we do this consistently, actually, well, regardless of the consistency, but if we do it, we get more calcium ion accumulation, which is going to cause muscle damage. The catch is we do need to do it probably at least for a couple training blocks every 90 days ish. Okay. It might be sooner than that. You don't need to do a lot, maybe a week or two bringing them in the protein. Or sorry, the end of the program, sorry. The reason why is because of something called sarcomeregenesis. We add sarcomeres in series. Sarcomere is basically, again, another part of the biology behind muscles. And when we look at that, it's basically creating what we actually would see as muscle length. Okay? So it's like the way I want you guys to think of it is posture. Meaning, like, if you look at somebody who can get in a lot of length in positions, they tend to be having good posture. If you look at somebody who has a really inability, they just cannot get into positions like an overhead squat. They're probably going to have like a little bit of a limited thoracic extension. They're probably going to have limited shoulder external rotation. They're going to probably have some problems in these different joint positions. That makes sense, guys?
Yeah.
And these things all limit that. And then, but again, it's a balancing act. But these things are going to create a lot of fatigue. Whereas if we limit those, then what we can do in the gym is what we do best, which is work hard. And then we avoid the things that cause more muscle damage. And all of our protein that we're taking in goes directly towards muscle growth, which is a very, very cool thing. The last thing I'll say is when you've worked out and you've stimulated it, and then what happens is you do it again too soon. Any additional stimulus you're doing is chances are just feeding into muscle damage, okay? So an example would be like Robert goes in, he works his back today. 2 days later, his back's still fried. He wants to get a sick back pump, works his back again. He's probably not getting any additional muscle stimulation. He's probably just leaning into more muscle damage because it's already been stimulated, right? Unless the program he had was so articulate that like the stuff on the one day was for specifically lats, the next day was specifically traps, the next day was specifically teres minor major or something like that, okay? But you'd have to be extremely efficient for that kind of stuff to work, okay? So guys, before I go on, I wanted to kind of pause there. Does that, first of all, let me just ask a couple questions. Does that make sense to you guys? Yeah?
Yep.
Any questions about it? Because it can be a lot to understand that. At the end of the day, it's actually pretty simple. And what I'm hoping to do in the kind of the second part of this call is to kind of break it down and actually make it more accessible to you. So does that make sense?
Yeah, so I guess my question is, when do you know that the damage has been all repaired and growth is initiated?
Performance.
Okay.
Like, I know that's why I want to make it really accessible. I'm really glad you asked that question, man, because that's literally where we're going. So, like, when it comes down to measuring how we can actually do this, because a lot of people, what do you think the answer would have been 10 years ago? Soreness.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably what people have said, right? Soreness. Like, if you're sore, give it more time. Soreness has nothing to do with it. Okay. So, another thing you guys can write down. Is write down the repeated bout effect and do some research on that, okay? Look into that because it's super, super fascinating. The repeated bout effect is essentially what the body has a protective mechanism against exactly what it is, repeated bouts of exercise or new threats, new physiological threats. So a repeated bout effect would be like, you guys ever had a really, really spanking workout and it just kills you when you are sore? And if you're anything like the sick person that I am in the head, you look for that soreness again the next workout. Because it makes you feel proud, right? And then what happens? You do the next workout and the soreness doesn't come. And you're almost a little upset with yourself. You ever had that?
Yeah, it's like chasing a punk. Yeah.
Because like you want it, because you're like, I did it. That's awesome. That must have meant I did something right. So you go back the next week and you're like, oh my God, did I not do something right? I didn't get as sore. I must not have worked as hard, right? So it has nothing to do with it. That's why I want you to look up the repeated bout effect, because the repeated bout effect is literally that in action, okay? It's the body protecting you against that soreness because it realized that it was a threat. Okay? So that's what we have there, and that's why soreness isn't it. But it's performance, man. Because what happens is when we look at fatigue management, when we accumulate muscle damage, right, and we don't only prioritize, I don't think you ever can only prioritize muscle stimulus. You're gonna get some damage. It's gonna be a little bit. We wanna try to look at damage like paying our taxes. If we could all just pay less taxes, we would probably all be richer, right? We'd have to make less money. Yeah, I think we agree on that. So same kind of thing. Instead of looking at muscle growth like you said, we're actually trying to solve how to grow muscle more. A lot of guys actually know how to grow muscles. You're pretty much all doing it. Get in the gym, work hard, and just get really, really efficient at the motions you're choosing. What we want to do is we want to stop paying the tax man. Okay. The tax man is muscle damage. Okay. You want to stop doing that because that's taking your gains away from you. It's like basically you saying, "Hey, I made $5," and the guy's like, ha, "Come on," and then you have to pay him $4, and you're like, "Crap!" And then that happens every single week, right? So when it comes down to this kind of stuff, it's like knowing the difference between that and performance is going to be the proxy, because performance is going to tell you that you actually have not dealt with any fatigue, because fatigue with a neurological signal that you're still in a muscle damage state. Muscle damage, and this is super fascinating. Muscle damage is a whole body phenomenon, right? So meaning you can train your calves, like, and to train them to the point where they are just broken and never being able to walk. I'll tell you a funny story in 2 seconds. But train them to the point they're broken, and you will literally get fatigue in the brain that'll affect your next chest day. Okay, that is true. That is 100% true. Okay. And vice versa for anything else. Train your quads super, super hard. We've all been there. I know you guys have had this one. Train your quads so hard, do a disgusting Ben Pekulski leg day, and then next day go do arms, something like that, or go do chest. And you can't train chest. It's just you feel weak. You had that, right? So that would be fatigue. Okay. So if we look at performance as a proxy, though, what we want to see is we want to see those numbers go up. Now, are we going to be breaking records to the point where 1 week you do a deadlift of 100 pounds, 200 pounds, 300 pounds, and in 5 months you're deadlifting 1 million pounds? Obviously not. What we're looking for is some kind of progress. What does that look like? Better, more refined technique, better control through the tempo, right? Owning of ranges, meaning like you're better in contracted positions and shortened positions. You can add a rep. You can add weight. And weight, I don't mean put a 45 on. I'm talking about put a 2 on, put a 1 pound on. I have 1/2 pound weights on in my gym that I'll use, just something to quantify that, right? And then also knowing that in with the mature side of our brain, that sometimes as you're in the gym longer, if we have any vets in the call, like Matthew would attest this really well, is as you're in the gym longer, you realize progress is still happening even though you're not putting weight or reps on the bar every single week, because the amount of adaptation in terms of myofibril addition you need in the muscles to make the weight go up is much larger, and it just takes more time. Okay? It just takes more time. Does that last sentence make sense, guys? Like you need more myofibril, so you need more tissue to make weight go up. When if we're all weak and we can only lift pencils, and if we go to the gym and we lift pencils, next week you're lifting 5 pounds. You know it. And then if we lift the 5 pounds next week, what's going to happen? You're going to grab the tens. We know. So we've already made 200% increase, right? But we can't logically continue that progression scheme for the rest of our life, because otherwise we'd be sitting there curling like Popeye 1 million pounds a hand. And that's impossible. Okay. So that was a really good question. I like that. What else? What else? John, got any questions? You good? Robert? Chaz? You good? Robert, you good?
Yeah, I think for me, it's been about balancing the goals and trying to align on the right type of training for the right outcome. So previously, I've probably, I've gone through sort of a powerlifting stage, and then I've gone through, some hypertrophy stuff. And because this was body composition work I was doing with Andrew, and he was doing sort of like GBC, full body joint sets. And I was trying to wrap my head around if I'm doing a triple superset of compounds to keep my heart rate really high and get the blood pumping high to low, because almost the cardio output that I'm looking for to keep myself up in the zone to burn calories while still doing resistance work, was it how then I have to shift my head around, should I be pushing the extra set or should I be going longer reps? And it's just trying to align. What's the outcome I'm looking for with how I'm lifting the weight? And sometimes it was, so I just had to listen to what Andrew was saying. Is it the tempo? Is it the rest? For example, I found myself when he would set me 3 to 4 sets of something, tape, if he said 3 to 4 sets of 8 to 12, I would find myself doing, like a 12, 10, 8, 8, like I sort of would have if I was doing hypertrophy. And he was like, no, I want you doing 4 sets of 12. If you can find a weight that you can do 4 sets of 12 with the 90-second break I'm giving you, and only when you can do that, go up. Like, I don't want you increasing the weight and tapering down your reps, which is how I always trained previously. So I just had to adjust my expectations of away from some of the hypertrophy thinking into, oh, no, at the moment, I'm trying to get my heart rate up. I'm trying to get my blood pumping head to toe. I'm trying to go into a triple superset of, some of that brutal. It's like, bench to Romanian deadlift to walking lunges or something, and you're just gassed by the end of it.
Oh yeah. But you know what though, like what you just said is extremely valuable, because it's like it's specificity, man. Like that's what I preach all the time. It's like people really need to lean on specificity. Like when is the last time you saw somebody go play badminton and they're like, by the end of this badminton match, I really want to make sure that my 100-meter dash is better. That doesn't make any sense. Nobody would say that. Or imagine if you went to play pool, the person's like, by the time I'm done playing pool with you, I better have the rock and body ready for my bikini by summer. Like what? We're playing pool. It's like that doesn't
I
sound.
realized, before training with Andrew, that there were probably periods where I was mixing the training styles, and it's the army, so you used to get stuck where a lot of my training was dictated by someone. So I'd be doing sort of hypertrophy training, and the next day I'd go to work, and the PT would be circuit training and a long run, or I'd do deadlifts the day before, come to work the next day, and someone would make up the session, and it was circuit work with more deadlifts. There was one year in particular where I trained hard, but I realized I was training with a couple of guys who were really into their powerlifting, and I look back now and go, I was sort of power lifting for my squats and deads, but then trying to do hypertrophy for other bits, and I realized the balance was probably just totally blowing things out, because I would be training completely the wrong way for the wrong muscle group and not getting the impact.
No, so there's also something kind of important that you kind of touched on without knowing, maybe, is that people shouldn't ever guilt themselves, again, in my opinion, for trying. Like that, remember, like anybody in the gym is leagues ahead already because you're in the gym, right? So we all need to give ourselves credit for that, right? And nothing we're talking about in terms of the C, the like the, you know, that kind of journey towards, I don't want to say optimal, I hate that word, but just like what we would define as maybe like the right progression method, right? It shouldn't detract from the fact that we're in the gym and we're all paying that due and we're doing good by that alone, right? So it's like what you're doing is working. Keep at it. If there's anything that I've learned, not only in my career but just across everything, is that like the number one thing that yields results is literally consistency. It doesn't matter how good you are. If you give up, you are not as good as the person who is worse than you but kept going. That's how it works, right? So as long as we can keep that in the back of our mind, then it can pay us. Like so much more in the end if we start getting specific. Because it lets our brain buy in. We talk about that all the time. Buy-in is huge. Meaning, like, if I was to tell you, Robert, right now, I'd say, hey man, I want you to have an intra-workout carbohydrate, for example. And then you're like, oh, I have a hard time with carbs. You know, like, and I'm like, why? And then you say, because in the past, whenever I've eaten carbs, I've gained weight, right? And I'm like, well, it's interesting because we're in a growth phase right now. And I think it could be really valuable for you to, you know, get that energy and replenish your muscles' glycogen so you can have a better workout where you can take your sets further. And if you can take your sets further, you can get a better hypertrophy stimulus. And then all that is almost like met with like a closed door because you're still hearing carbs make me fat. Right? Then what happens is we haven't bought into the fact that like we're here for muscle growth because your brain is actually still on the fat loss side. Does that make sense? So that's what I see very often when it comes down to understanding that difference between what we're trying to approach versus what we want to see as a result. And that can be hard. It can be very hard. I think we all struggle with it. I think we all will forever because, like, there's that, again, we're humans, man. I think it's in our nature to consistently pursue optimal. It's like we're all chasing the horizon, right? And it's a good thing. But at the same time, it can be something that dissuades you from making that buy-in towards the op what actually could be more of an optimal choice. So if we look at this and we say like, hey, exercise execution, yeah, man, like there's benefit towards circuit training. There's benefit towards doing things that get your heart rate up, and you can do it with weights, and you can do it with fan bike, and you can do it with anything you want. There's a million different methods towards getting your fan bike up. There's a thousand ways to skin a cat. What's the best for you? The one you like, the one you're good at, right? Now, is it best for hypertrophy? Maybe not. Can you do both at the same time? Sure you can. It's about your goal. Okay.
Yeah, and I think the thing that I think the more programmatic approach. So since I've been on this program, should stop saying the word program, but that's probably been more consistent. So probably in the past, you get so many data feeds from something where you go, I read this article and it says I should be getting, I should be taking like intra carbs, so I'll do that in my workout. But then I read this other article and it says that I should be maxing out these sets. So you incorporate that. and you end up chopping and oh, and this one says I need to be getting like 90 seconds of like heart rate maxed out cardio. So I'll incorporate that into my session and you're trying to piece it together. But when you sort of what this has been useful for me is to step back. And what I found is there's I guess it's the consistency focus. There was nothing that Andrew had me doing that I hadn't sort of seen before. And it was actually, lower. Like I probably overtrained in the past by trying to do too many things at once and trying to maximize too much and then either injure or burn out. Sometimes it was just like, no, just like every second day, do your hour of zone two cardio for me. Just walk on the treadmill. Like what? Like not sprint until I vomit or not do like the Sparta 300 workout or,
Exactly. Yeah. We turn into like sadists like that because we get addicted to that. And that's again, that's great if the goal is just like metabolic stuff and just like handing your butt to yourself and that's what you enjoy. If anybody ever tells me something, like it's so funny because like I could talk about this awesome stuff all day. I would nerd about it. I love it. It's super fascinating to me and I love helping people get better results like that. But if somebody said to me, "But I like this," and they just said, I'm like, "Okay, conversation's over." Because it's like you like it, so I'm not going to take it away from you. I could try to give you more information, but if you don't like what I'm saying, then your way is now optimal because you'll do it. Like the best workout is the one we do, right? And so that's kind of the whole point of this. This is like understanding, like if we start from there and then kind of work back, it's just information to kind of guide you through the process, right? But what you said right there, it matters, man, because like when we're chasing hypertrophy, when we're trying to look at this kind of stuff, again, optimal is it's a horizon we're trying to swing for. So yeah, Austin, I didn't see you talk at all, man. I think you came in halfway to the call. Are you lost at all in this, man, or are you good?
I was in the car earlier. I've been on the whole call.
Okay, you've been on the call. Okay, good. Good. So again, I'm not going to get into too much into what the actual like with the nutrition specific stuff. I'm going to leave it for Greg. What I can tell you, guys, if you want to upregulate your ability to take in protein from the training side, that was the first half of the call. From the actual protein side, there's a couple things you can do. If you guys aren't on digestive enzymes, get on them, okay? Get on them with betaine HCL, okay? Digestive enzymes with betaine HCL. I'm pretty sure it's Bioptimizers or it's Science Designs for Health. I don't know what their brand, what their actual digestive enzyme is called, but that's an awesome one. They're really good. Ben has suggested them forever. My clients rave about them. They love them. It's going to help your body break it down and give yourself the necessary stomach acid to essentially process this stuff, okay? Because when you're taking too much protein, one of the common side effects, obviously, would be digestion, right? We have certain digestive things could go wrong, constipation being one of them. So making sure you give your body what it needs, it can be really beneficial, okay? That's the second thing I was going to say is how do you know if you're getting too much protein? The first thing I would say is I would ask you, instead of asking whether or not you are getting too much protein, ask yourself if you're making progress already. If you're making progress, you probably are getting enough protein. Again, if you're using performance as a metric, and performance obviously in growth, like the metrics, I'm talking about performance because I'm kind of assuming that your coach is already doing girth measurements with you, he's doing performance, or sorry, he's doing girth and he's doing like bio scans or he's doing something like that. And then we can talk about for performance here because we can add that element. So if you look at performance as like something else, then we can say, hey, are lifts going up? Are you getting an extra rep? Are you getting stronger? And if you're getting stronger, that means your body is obviously getting the protein materials to add those myofibrils when you're getting the stimulus, okay? And then so do you need more? Probably not. People like to think about more and try to be like, well, if I get more, can I get more growth? It's like, what are we talking about? Like 16-inch arm to 20-inch arm overnight? It's not gonna happen. Like we're looking at this growth as a system, right? And this it will progress, but like just ask that one question first. Are you seeing progress? And then chances are when we're getting 1 gram per pound of lean mass, that's a really important asterisk there. 1 gram per pound of lean mass as a starting point. If you're not seeing progress, you need to look at what you're possibly doing in your program from the first half of this call that could be causing muscle damage or fatigue. That would be delaying your ability to get that progress. Okay. An example of that would be like, let's just say I'm talking to you, Austin, and you're going in there and you're taking 1 gram per pound of body weight and you're doing legs and you're doing so many sets because you're just like a leg barbarian and you're just going there doing so many sets and you're like, oh, I'm dead. I can't. And your legs are doing this at the gym. You're walking out like that. And then the next week you're like, I didn't grow. I don't understand. If anything, I came back kind of weak. And we've all had that. I've done it. And you're like, hey, what's going on? Well, it's not your, promising, it's not protein. sounds to me like beat the crap of yourself. It sounds to me like the amount of stimulus that you needed was like here, and then the rest of it is just obliteration. Like you're like, I stimulated and then I obliterated. So what was the point of that? Because all that did is basically take away from this. So that means you netted zero. We paid the tax man all of our money rather than even keeping any of it, right? So that's what I would look at for that. Certain amino acids you want to look at too that could hopefully help. You're probably getting this in your diet, but leucine seems to be the most important. You're going to get it primarily from beef. Beef is pretty much the most anabolic protein source you can get. If you guys didn't know that already, lean on beef. Okay. Dun, 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 dun. Other questions I get constantly asked: protein timing. There's a new article that came out recently about protein timing being optimal before bed. It's kind of ironic that I saw this because, or not ironic, just kind of funny that I saw this because I saw it about 10 years ago too. And then it was disproven, and then it was proven again. And so what I'm pretty sure they're doing these tests, and I can't say this is completely me being just speculating, is that they're just kind of like testing it, people just and just being like, hey, this elevate MIOPS. And then it's like, yes. And in that theory, as long as you're basically taking protein, you're going to get some kind of MIOPS elevation, right? So my suggestion is pay attention to your body signaling, okay? Whenever you're looking to do any type of studying, the biggest things that I can tell you will always lead towards growth and performance upregulation would be digestion and sleep, okay? Because everything else you're going to have to either look for a blood panel for, or you're going to have to wait 6 months for. Meaning you have to wait 6 months for your bicep to get from 16, 17 to see it work. Whereas if you look at, did this trash my sleep? You can find that out overnight, right? If you guys want to experiment with taking in protein before bed, try it. That's the only thing I can say. Try it. And if it trashes your sleep, you'll know. I'm telling you, you'll know, okay? When I have food before bed, it trashes my sleep, okay? I find there's a sweet window about like for me, it's no food within about 3 hours. If I can just stop the food at 3 hours, I'm not hungry, and it's good enough that I don't get a bad sleep. I sleep like a baby, and that's new for me because I have kids and I haven't slept like that in a long time. But like that would be perfect. If I have food beyond that, it tends to not be fun. Fat food, high fat food is a definite no-no because of how long it takes to digest. It sits in your tract a lot, and it's not fun for anybody. I wouldn't suggest that. But as for the protein stuff, there have been some studies lately showing that it does upregulate MIOPS if you have it before bed. So if you want to play around with that, just try it, but track your sleep at the same time and see if it goes down. If you don't know how to track your sleep, if you don't have a sleep tracker, one simple way you can do it that I find at least can be a quick little tell is if you have a smartwatch, wear it the before you track your sleep and see what your lowest resting heart rate was throughout the night. And then do the protein and then check it again and see what your lowest resting heart rate was. Because if it was like, let's just say you achieve 50 and then you had the protein the next night and the lowest was like 65, it ruined your sleep. I'm telling you right now, you didn't get the same quality. Because we can play that study in reverse. I could tell you, I have to go have a beer right now and your sleep's gonna go trash. And that it would elevate your heart rate. So that's the first thing. What can help with yeah, something else really in terms of like MIOPS regulation, other than making sure my resting heart rate during sleep, I hit a low of 37 for the day. I'm pretty sure I died. And then I was just like floating. I have a friend that 39, yeah. I have a friend, we're always like comparing resting heart rate lows at night. And she's like, I hit 38, I'm like 37. And we're always laughing. She's like, I'm pretty sure we're just dead. Just hibernating. Pretty fun though. When you start getting into conditioning, you can kind of fool around with it. But yeah, in terms of spacing, that's another question people ask is like, do you need to space out your protein? Do you need to make sure that you're getting it at optimal times? Again, every study that I've found seems to be that your body cares more about 24 hours than it cares about 3 hours, meaning that your body has a digestive system. Night mats. Your body has a digestive system for a reason. If you need protein, it'll store it. Not in a store, but it'll keep it in the body, and it won't get rid of it. If you take in more, the body's smarter than we are. It'll spit it out, and then it becomes waste tissue, right? So I wouldn't be so concerned about whether or not you're getting it every hour, every 3 hours, every 6 hours. I would get concerned first with hitting it in 24 hours, okay? And then if you want to add the next layer to that, get it post-workout. And if you want to add the next layer to that, get a lot of protein in the morning. The morning seems more important than anything else, right? Then another layer to that, making sure that you're maybe dropping the high fat protein before bed so you can optimize sleep. And again, you can keep on dieting layers, but the first layer is, are you getting enough protein in the day? And that again is about 1 gram per pound of lean mass. You can definitely train your body to get more as you're intaking more. If you guys are aware of the things that can cause digestive issues, if you guys can actually just let me know, write some in the chat or just take off your mics and let me know what you think some digestive issues would be that you'd have or that you have had with protein, that could be something you could watch out for if you're trying to increase your protein intake. The first one would be, like, again, constipation.
So I got a question about things added to protein, so like protein drinks.
Yeah, sure.
Obviously, on a weight loss, I've been trying to control the carbs. I'll put MCT in the protein for a fat source, because I've been really trying to keep my carb intake under like 60 grams a day. But occasionally, a little fruit, blueberries, or even some other kind of a pineapple, some other thing, make it taste a little different. Is that beneficial or detrimental to the protein biology, to
Oh
the
no, it's not going to hurt the protein, man. I've heard some arguments about bananas doing something. I don't know, man. I wouldn't land on that too much. The only thing you want to pay attention to is if you're having carbs, again, get specific and ask yourself why. The question of why, just simply that alone, can lead down rabbit holes that can be incredibly informative. For example, why fruit? And it doesn't mean you're wrong, just means like why? Why fruit? And then we're like, why? And then the first answer is gonna like it. But like why fruit though, right? And then it's like, carbs? Okay, so why the carbs from fruit? And then you find out fruit is fructose. Your muscles don't store fructose. Your muscles only store glucose. So your liver can store fructose, but it's a finite amount. So what blueberries can do immensely well for you is you can give you a really good source of fiber. One of the only sources of fiber that I'm actually, that along with avocado, that I'm really going to be an advocate for because I think it's really good for you. But it also really helps you with the byproducts of managing like protein breakdown as a nitrogen process in the body. Like it really, really helps with that. Okay. So there's a bunch of different things that happen as like we never get one thing happening in the body. You don't just break down protein. You also like have this nitrogen thing that's happening in your body. It's a lot of science going on there. But essentially there's a byproduct. And having blueberries, high antioxidant foods, they're really good at helping manage that. So blueberries are awesome. They're just an awesome food to add in all around. Now, if you're having something to put into your shake to help with recovery should be looked at like, what are you missing? Well, you're probably never going to be literally depleted of glycogen because if your muscles were depleted of glycogen, the muscle would be necrotic. But if you were depleted even a little bit from the workout, you have to have your carbs literally post-workout, like as quickly as possible. Because your muscles, it actually turns out the bros were right. There is quite an anabolic window, but it's a small window. It's meaning like it's like pretty much now or never. And so if you want to have some,
window or something like that.
yeah, it's small, man. I'm not sure if they found out what it is, but basically they proved that it's smaller than you think. Meaning like it's almost like immediately. It's like when you're leaving the gym, have some rice cakes on the way out.
Okay.
Like quick. And that would be an opportunity.
Like added to your drink on
Yeah.
like the last quarter of your workout, you know what I mean? And just start
Yeah,
consuming it
so
then.
that's why I just don't even do it. I just tell my clients to have intra-workout carb because that way it's in their stomach. They're already drinking it, right? And they're having it in their stomach while they're working out, so they don't have to deal with the issue. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So if fructose is not the greatest carb source,
Yeah.
a source would be easier for the body to uptake and utilize.
Something simple, man. Something like again, white rice, potato, like that kind of stuff can just be good. Just because it's not, it's just quick, it's ready for your muscles to take in.
Okay.
Right? And you'll know because you get a sweet pump off it. Stuff like that really is it's funny because you'll be like, wow, I look great. And you look full. But I would just suggest like even oats, stuff like that. Like I used to grind oats into my shake. And you don't even notice. It just makes it thicker. If you grind it in, it just makes it more thick and you just drink it and it feels great. It's hard in carbs. So like if you're in a deficit, it's probably not gonna be the best idea, but
Right.
it's it definitely can help.
Okay.
I think Austin had the question just before we wrap up for the night about the protein amount. So, man, I'm not sure what you're arguing, but the thing is that again, that was one of those things that's been it's been perpetuated in the industry for like how many years now, right? People are like willing to like throw heads over this. And from what I've seen is that it doesn't really seem to matter, okay? Because it seems that not only can you take in as much as you want, but also those who have not trained their body can't. And I think that's the reason why it seems like it's so much of a problem. As an example, I had a friend that was like a World of Warhammer addict. This guy was just nuts. He's sitting in his basement. He had like the whole TV tan, black bags underneath his eyes, right? And I gave him some protein and threw up. So it's like his body was like, nope. It's like health. Like it's crosses, right? So it's not gonna happen. Whereas for a guy like you're in fit, we're all in fitness. Who's that?
We don't want. Yeah.
Over here. So yeah, like I'm not sure what that was, but anyways, for guys who are in fitness, you're probably not gonna have a problem with like upregulating the amount. Again, just pay attention to certain things like any type of inflammation signals, pay attention to certain things like digestion, constipation, bloating. These things are all gonna tell you whether or not things are going wrong. Okay. In my opinion, it doesn't seem like there's an amount. Go ahead, buddy.
I was gonna say it doesn't bother me because I prefer to eat like most of my calories in like two large meals, but I have so many friends like just spouting like the bro science of your body can only digest 30 grams of protein in a sitting and how I'm wasting it. I was like, well, if that's the case, you know, there's so many high level athletes that fast and have like one large meal a day. It makes no sense.
No,
And then I'll
like
even see like Mike Israetel, who calls himself a doctor, is still saying that. But finally, like social media is sharing a recent study where they measured up to 100 grams of carbs in a sitting where muscle protein synthesis still continued to go up. But I haven't seen any studies that hit the mainstream that are higher than that. But I'll
yeah.
have 100, 200 grams of carbs in a sitting sometimes.
Yeah, so what I found is that's 100% true. You're right. That there doesn't seem to be like an end, okay? But here's where the stuff gets hairy, and we'll kind of like we'll end on this note because we can probably talk about this for hours. Is that you will see it probably come to a tilt when you continue to study across 4 hours, or sorry, 24 hours, meaning that like you'll probably if the person had so much protein in them all day, like imagine that I studied you, and I was like, hey man, I'm gonna come over, we're gonna start the study at 8 a.m., and I'm gonna shove your face in protein. You can't stop eating until your workout. And then you're gonna work out, and then I'm gonna shove 100 grams of protein in your mouth. You're not gonna absorb it. Because it's already in, you've been eating all the time, right? That's kind of the point. Or the vice versa, which means you eat before up to, and then once the workout's done, you stop eating. Right? So that's the other thing. That's what I'm kind of leaning on, is like it seems that the body only really cares about one thing, which is how much are you getting in a day? And as long as you manage that, you're fine. I've had up to like I've had 200 grams post-workout before. I've never had a problem. It's just that some
Yeah,
people
to just hit
are.
your macros and don't worry about breaking up into six small meals a day, which is
Yeah,
not
and again,
feasible for most of us that have jobs.
exactly. And if it's an issue for you, then just look at the signs. That's what I was trying to say. Like we can manage this really simply by like even I'm not sure who asked it, but the question of like how do we know if we're in a fatigued state? Or how do we know if you have muscle damage? Performance. That's it. Performance. Are you progressing? Yes or no? So same kind of thing. How do you know if you're taking too much protein? Are you getting inflammation signals or digestive problem? Right? If you are, if you're taking any more protein and the family hates you because you're gassing them out, then stop. That's probably too much. Like that's probably an issue. Or vice versa. You literally haven't gone to the washroom in a long time. Too much. Okay. Cool, guys. Did this call help?
Yeah, very beneficial.
Awesome. Awesome. So I hope that Greg's okay. If you guys can pop into the EverFit community and wish him and his son just a speedy recovery. Again, I think he's okay, but I'm sure he'd love to see it from you guys. And when you hear that he's back on, I would love for you to come in and laugh about how much of a bro I am compared to how much of a science nerd Greg is, because he'll talk about protein in this sense where he'll have pictures of cells in front of you and nuclei, and you'll be like, whoa. And you're like, wow, that's a different kind of conversation. But it's also really cool. So, guys,
Thank
until
you,
next time,
Steve.
talk soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you.